I'm ready to execute on that plan you always tell yourself of if you got thrown out of a moving car that you just start rolling really fast and you'd Excellent. Be fine. So I'm ready to be that person.
Okay, yeah. I also have a plan. If a plane ever starts to crash, I'm going to leap out and land on a pillow factory or a haystack.
Chris, I have some very harrowing things to tell you about offshore manufacturing in the pillow industry over the last 30 years. That's going to throw a wrench into that plan.
In ancient times, there was a continent ruled by giant sloths, cave bears, direwolves, lions, and saber-toothed smilodons. Horses and mastodons roamed the glass grasslands. Eventually, the ice sheets receded, bringing bipedal hunters to the land, and the extinctions of the great beasts followed. Still more hunters sailed in from other lands, bringing guns, germs, and steel, changing the land forever. From that society sprang many new technologies. From those technologies sprang a little-known podcast, broadcasted live from a little-known art shed. I'm Matt Carl.
I'm Normal Andy.
I'm producer Chris.
And Mike, weren't you going to say something?
I was planning to sidle on in and not do it.
Okay, why don't you, Carl, finish off the intro.
Yeah,
oh,
thank you.
Well, welcome to the art shed. That was it.
All right.
Nice.
Cracking a beer. All right, so that went as well as most of the intros.
Yes, that's pretty good. In some ways, it went smoother than most of the intros.
All right. I didn't need to fumble. I was busy taking notes.
Excellent. Oh, you didn't fumble.
So Mike Healy is our guest this week, and we'll get into more with Mike. And
Stay tuned.
I think the notes for that intro require a timeline. You need to map it all out.
I wrote that during lunch break, and I was like, this is just getting ridiculous, you know. But I had to, like, somehow bring it around to the art shed.
Mm. Yeah. Once you buy into a certain track, you got to sort of roll with it all the way.
I mean, Chris, that's really the same thing that the planet has experienced over the eons, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like our microscopic, on a planet level, our microscopic presence on the planet.
Right.
In 30 seconds or 20 seconds, however long that took you.
Yeah. This is like the abbreviated cosmos or whatever. What's that?
Right.
Carl Sagan.
Exactly. Well, it made me think of things, I mean, about the glaciers. I thought Carl was going to go on to, like, you know, Lake Maspinock being carved out.
That's another one. Let me write that down. We can use that in another episode. Yeah. I like that. Nice, dude.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So, Mike, that's something. Carl actually lives on a lake in Hopkinton, Massachusetts called Lake Maspinock. And it's Hopkinton, so it's the exact distance from Boston that the marathon is, because that's the starting point. but you're like in the crazy lake town. So,
Mike,
yes,
you started Guild Row, didn't you? And I'm like, can you explain to people what Guild Row is?
I don't know if I can explain that to people, but I can certainly try to do so right now.
Yeah.
Guild Row is a venture my two business partners and I started. I mean, the germ of the idea germinated, or whatever the vocabulary would be, almost 5 years ago. And we now at this point have a 3-building, you know, neighborhood social club that marries kind of indoor-outdoor social space with a wood shop, teaching/test kitchen, and also some pretty badass, outdoor test drive installations, including some open flame grills that Chris designed and fabricated on site for us. The idea was generally that, as with many things, we started with two observations that are more cliche bad jokes than anything else. But once you commit to a bit, all things are possible, right? So we started off just with the thoughts that, nobody really feels like they have a good way to connect and meet people in the real world, that everyone, you know, has this love-hate relationship with social media, and it's made it so easy to connect with other people that we all have hundreds of Facebook friends or Instagram follows that if we encountered them on the street, we would walk right past them without acknowledging each other. That that connection had become so effortless as to be totally without value. And then the other, you know, observation slash bad joke was that, you know, everyone is totally conditioned to only being able to do things through their phones, right down to adjusting the temperature in your house or turning on your car or, you know, flushing the toilet. And we wanted to come up with ideas that would kind of cut against those two grains. And the kind of place that we landed was, if there were a way to do relationship building and meeting people in an analog fashion as opposed to a digital fashion, that would probably be good. And if there were a way to focus on the types of things you can't do through your phone, that would also be good. And so marrying the two is how we got to the place where, yeah, it would actually be kind of cool to have a place in your neighborhood where you could get to know somebody by chopping firewood together or making bread. There's actually, as we speak right now at 8:14 Central on Saturday or on Friday, there's the bread baking club is meeting at Guild Row right now. And marrying these types of sort of hands-on activities where you couldn't even be on your phone if you wanted to because your hands are applied to other things, which, as I say, it sounds kind of dirty in a way that I don't intend it to. was really sort of what the ambition was. And so we've got, as I said, we've got sort of the lounge all day hangout slash bar space with the courtyard, but then there's flexible space for everything from concrete work to yoga classes to, cooking out to pickling to, laser cutting and welding and everything in between.
That was awesome, dude.
Yeah. So it's kind of like a kind of all-purpose makerspace.
It is, except a makerspace is really a place for someone who has a project or something that they're working on that they know how to make and are very oriented towards accomplishing that task. And we're much more about the communality of doing all these things. So, for instance, at Bread Club tonight, some people are going to be making loaves and throwing them in, but it's not the type of thing where someone's trying to invent a new kind of bread or get out 30 loaves. There are other people who are just showing up with loaves that they've made, and it's kind of a show and tell, or some people have maybe made relishes or spreads. And it's a lot more about the connection that comes around, you know, the common experience of having made something. Mm-hmm. Whereas for my part or a lot of people's part, when, you know, you are going into a makerspace, a lot of times it's like, I actually have a vision for a piece of furniture that I would like to create. And I don't want to talk to a lot of people while I do that. I just want to do that.
Totally. I totally get that. It's like, you know how when you get too serious, sometimes you take the fun out of shit. So this is kind of like the fun part. We're just doing it. No, that's what the art shed is all about. Let's just do shit. And if it comes out good, so be it. But if not, you know, who cares? We had fun. We hung out with all our friends or whatever, you know?
Amen.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's also for like people who want to be initiated into like bread baking and stuff, right? Like,
yeah, that's
it's like a learning space.
Yes, that's definitely the sweet spot. I mean, the way that when we were first raising money, I had kind of phrased it was, you know, in 1978, if you belonged to a gymnasium, that meant that like you were like an Arnold Schwarzenegger, Lou Ferrigno person, and that was like your niche lifestyle. Yeah. And otherwise, you had never lifted a weight in your life. And then, you know, in the 80s, someone came up with this idea of like a health club that was a lot more of a democratically accessible entree into things like, you know, I don't know, step classes or weights or cardio or anything. And so we've got about 250 members at the moment, and it really runs the gamut from people who are professional quality at craft or art or whatever to, you know, people who are just enthusiasts who are sort of willing to, you know, make some mistakes and try to contribute either socially or with generous energy or anything like that. So, I don't know. Just Andy, you put your finger right on the pulse of a pretty key side of it. Yeah.
How long has this space been around?
Man. So we opened in late August of 2020.
Oh.
Which, yeah. I mean, if you're really wanting to test the proof of your social club concept,
yeah,
you know, we actually just wanted to pick the absolute most challenging time,
yeah,
just to be able to, you know, be like Harry Houdini taking ice baths in the negative 40 degree, you know, waters of whichever, maybe even the lake that you're on right now, Carl. I forget the name of it, but yeah, it was, you know, I mean, we had to kind of custom design and build this facility because there was nothing out there like it. So no one was going to obviously build one and rent it back to us. So this was something that we ended up having to find property, buy the property, figure out how to develop real estate. Mm-hmm. And so all these wheels got set inexorably in motion about 4 years ago in the spring of 2017. And, you know, the roller coaster just happened to finish its ride at the height of a global pandemic. So it's been interesting to say the least, but you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't think this has been an expected condition for anybody. So I don't want to put too many tears into my beer.
Yeah. And it's, I want to say too, I mean, it's, the space is a beautiful space. It's really huge. I mean, Mike, I know when you're saying three buildings, you know, the courtyard alone is just a massive space and the woodworking shop and everything has been really just detailed to a really great level. It's a very artistic feeling space when you're in there as well. It feels creative. It makes you feel creative when you're in it.
Where exactly is it?
So I don't know how familiar your listenership might be with the geography of Chicago,
right?
But trying to paint a picture as directly as I can. If you imagine the downtown Chicago, as a lot of people probably have experience with, or at least an image of, there is a river which runs through the downtown area that comes to a T intersection in the heart of downtown, and one branch goes south and one branch goes north. Mm-hmm. And if you were to follow the northern branch about 4.5 miles in the north-northwesterly direction that it goes, we are right at where it intersects with, an arterial street called Belmont and the river. So we are in, you know, kind of like in between a hipster neighborhood in a kind of longtime neighborhood that's been on the edge of gentrification, in the midst of a few other zones that are at the confluence there. And if you were to zoom out and scale, we're about 40% of the way between downtown and O'Hare in nice. Chicago.
I mean, that seems like a good location.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Like what kind of opening in a pandemic you must have like had, like especially a social space. Like, how did you handle that? Like making this space safe?
Really, we sort of lucked into quite a bit. You know, as Chris mentioned, it's really a large footprint. It would read to most people who are in there as a city block that wow. we had created a U shape around a large 3,000 square foot courtyard. And it's also a little unique because we're right along the river. Chicago is typically flat throughout the entire city, but at points where the river runs through the urban landscape, the roads rise at a, I think, 17 degree angle to reach the bridge height that you have to get through so that barges and whatnot can get underneath those bridges. And so we have an interesting condition where as you kind of progress through the buildings, you go from at grade to below grade as this road that we're on is Rockwell Street that we're on rises to meet the height of the bridge. So we have an interesting condition where all of our spaces are, you know, between 25 to 30 feet high. And we also invested heavily in garage doors around a central outdoor space. You know, in Chicago, we only get 93 days of sunshine per year. So you really optimize to enjoy that as much as you possibly can. And the single biggest intervention then is that we have just a massive volume of airspace, and it's extremely well ventilated. So, you know, knock on wood, we've been open about 5.5 months. And like any other business, we've sort of ridden the wave from being semi-busy to totally dead to semi-busy. But we have not had a single viral transmission issue
in the entire
time we've been open. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's definitely good. I mean, I know every time I've gone in there, I'm masked up and people take my temperature at the door. And,
Yeah. I mean, we take the best practice protocols as seriously as you can too. But I just feel like, the destiny is in the design for a lot of these businesses that are dealing with this type of thing so much.
So when Chris came in there, did he like drop trow and said, "Hey, take my temperature"?
No. It's as much as we try to be hands-on, we do have the contactless thermometers.
Key.
Yeah. I have a 2 and a 5-year-old though, so I'm no stranger to what you're talking about.
So, you know, after every pandemic, there's an age of debauchery. So
yeah, get ready.
You might be in for some good times coming up in Guild Row.
I'm very hopeful. I mean, we like I said, we've been super fortunate to have sort of had a membership model, because even though only about, I would say, 15% of our members regularly visit the space, people have still sort of been interested in seeking out ways to join, almost in the way that they feel like they are planting a tree for their post-COVID social life type thing. And from a, just from a cash flow and revenue perspective, that's obviously critical towards like staying afloat. But you're right. I mean, I've been reading all those articles and sort of meditating on that. And and this is a huge tangent, but I have this sort of like pet theory. I was a bartender for about 10 years. And one thing I've always noticed is that there's this sort of ironclad law note where no matter how busy or slow you are, every 15% increase in traffic brings a feeling of utter panic. That it's like, if you're used to having 2 people in line, once the first time there's 5 people in line, you freak out. And
totally.
So I think it's going to be very interesting to see how this happens. Our staff has been just tough as hell right now. Like we've had one guy handling pretty much every bar shift because, you know, we just can't carry that many folks. But, we all are eagerly awaiting sort of the thaw from COVID, but also we all sort of are going to have to go through that process of getting back into game shape, so to speak. So it'll be interesting.
Oh, it's going to be a fun time, eh? Do you guys make sauerkraut and stuff there?
The sauerkraut is on the horizon. We have reams and reams of programs sketched out with people sort of lined up to teach them. But through this winter, particularly, at the tail end of last summer, we got into a pretty good group with cocktail making classes.
Oh, sweet.
And some other like custom cooking stuff like ceviche and whatnot. As we've gone through the winter and traffic has narrowed, we've had a really dedicated base of folks who have just wanted to focus on staples like, bread and, basic like wood splitting and things like that.
Into the world shit.
To Carl's intro, I wonder if that's like deeply embedded in the survival rhythms of organisms on Earth or something, as you go into the winter. But
bunker up.
But like, yeah, pickling, sauerkraut, kimchi, jardinera, like all these things, we're eager to jump into them as soon as people, are ready to emerge from the bunker, so to speak.
Yeah. And you guys have like a restaurant that is closed now, but like I'm sure when things get back to normal,
it'll yeah, the open food up again. The food service side of it. We were running that in the like late summer when we were first open, and you know, I gotta confess to you guys, I missed those fucking sandwiches so much.
Nice.
They were so good. but yeah, right now we're partnered with a couple of local restaurants who they need the delivery traffic, and you know, we don't need to be staffing a short line cook all the time given the volume that we're in. But yeah, as the world gets back to normal, you know, we actually have to again plug Chris's grills that he made a little bit. We've had some interesting kind of dosey doughs where one of the more successful things we did in early September on Labor Day weekend, we did a sausage making class where we had people making sausage kind of from scratch.
Yeah.
And, you know, no one was really like, people were kind of cool to bring home like one or two sausages, but you know, you get 18 people and they're making, you know, six or eight sausages a piece. You have a lot of sausage on your hands.
Right.
And, so then what we did the next day is, instead of kind of serving the normal menu, we just got Chris's grills going and we just started cooking up the sausages and selling them for like $8 a plate or something.
Nice.
And yeah, it was nice. It was this kind of like self-contained, you know, this is as handcrafted as it gets, people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sausage party.
Yeah.
Chris, you want to go into the grills you make, dude?
Oh yeah. So I mean, the grills are they're kind of something that I call them fire troughs, basically. they're 4 feet long and about 20 inches deep, with charcoal grates that slide back and forth, and then the grills on top are cast iron and they slide back and forth as well. And you can swap out, you can put in, say, a cast iron griddle into it, you know, on top of it. You can put fire brick on top of it for making some flatbreads or something. And you can also have their crossbars at the top. So you can hang things. You could take a leg of lamb and hang it over the fire. And there are some hooks and different different devices that you can use. And you can even actually, I know at Jim's house, we did a pig on one of them, a whole pig.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah, so you just attach a motor on one side. Yeah, it's 4 feet long and 20 inches deep, so it's a decent size.
And you make them all from scratch?
Yeah, yeah. So it's evolved, but I think it's pretty much hit the final point of evolution for it at the moment. I can't think of too many other things to do to add to it.
Right.
I'll just add, they're pretty awesome looking. I mean, one of my favorite movies is Mad Max Fury Road, and I'm pretty convinced there's a scene on the cutting room floor of that movie that has these grills in it.
Nice.
And it was
the Thunder Grill.
It was inspired by a shorter version of the grill that I did about 8 years ago for Shai-Diderot, and we mounted it to the front of a shopping cart and pushed it around the city cooking for people during Shai-Diderot, which would be coming up the first weekend of March, but obviously this year it's canceled. But it was such a functional design that worked really well, even on a moving vehicle being pushed by hand around the streets of Chicago, that expanded out to a larger thing and then tweaking it. It has a very, very functional aspect. It's just, it is all about function. It has a functional heart to it.
Mike, what made you and your group of compatriots decide to make a place like this, like Guild Row?
You know, that's actually a really interesting question that I was talking to someone about this just yesterday. I mean, obviously the ideation process through which we got there was kind of what I said earlier, which was just the fact that it's like everyone has a bunch of bullshit social media friends, but people can't make real friends and everyone's on their phone all the time and they hate it. But even prior to that, I have two partners in this. My partner, Elise Agnello, is kind of or is an amazingly talented architect, and she designed the space, both the structural building shell, but also the interiors. And my other partner, Jim Lasko, is I suppose you'd call him like a civic artist, and, you know, has done everything from when the Obamas were in the White House, they had him design their first Halloween celebration for Washington, D.C. school kids to, you know, setting stuff on fire in public parks in various places in ways that were well received.
Right up our alley.
Yeah.
Carl's always setting things on fire in public parks.
Chris, too.
I know the three of you guys go like way back, but the moment at which this happened, so my background was actually in state and local politics in Illinois and Chicago. And, you know, Jim, Elise, and I had all met in, I think, 2012, 2013, out in Boston, actually, that we all happened to be out there at the same time. And, you know, we had had an affinity and thought each other were really cool, but then we all had our own kind of lives going on. But Jim and Elise were sort of working on some really innovative ephemera in public spaces, sort of ephemera festival art. And I was working for, you know, the governor of Illinois at the time. We had a re-election campaign coming up in 2014. And by training, I'm somewhat literate in urban planning and infrastructure and economic development. So I was trying to just roll projects out the door as fast as I could, like that type of thing. And, you know, before we knew it, in mid-2015, the governor for whom I was working had lost re-election, and the projects that Jim and Elise were working on had kind of petered out. And we had sort of just been gathering up for beers or shoot the breeze or whatever, just because we were in kind of a decompressed portion of, you know, the rhythms of our lives. And we had the reflection that, you know, we've always kind of talked about how cool it would be to do something together. And if we don't do it now, we should be honest about the fact that we're probably not ever going to do something together. So we dedicated ourselves to kind of meeting once or twice a week to think like as expansively as possible. And if we had someone we thought was cool, we would see if they wanted to come and talk to us as well. All to the idea of, you know, what should we do? And, you know, I had made the little joke about committing to a bit, but, you know, as we sort of like deconstructed all the different ideas you could have, like those two pieces about like the alienation from each other that we feel and the alienation from just the things in our lives that we feel. We decided we wanted to tackle that. And that then got to the place of social club for people who want to make stuff. And then, you know, that precipitated a bunch of questions around like, oh, well, how the fuck do you buy and develop industrial property? How do you it was a people-centric process. You know, it was, we had decided that we wanted to make a thing together. And that was sort of how we got to where we were.
Dude, that's awesome. And you know what? You want to, like, you don't want to go, like, do a job and then go home and do the thing you love. You want to be doing something you love at work. I mean, that's the goal, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that's actually, that's a great observation. And, you know, I mean, obviously, especially opening into a pandemic, this has not been all kind of sunshine and rainbows. But the thing that actually is the thing that we love doing is like working with each other and coming and confronting problems and coming up with ways to attack those problems. And, you know, there's then things within that that become jobs and chores, like,
right,
you know, matriculating a building project through the permitting and review process in the city of Chicago is every bit of what you can imagine it would be like.
Sounds awful.
Right. You even use the word matriculating.
I mean, you know, it's everything from, if your project team doesn't have both a really talented architect and someone who will hang out outside the bathrooms at City Hall to ambush people who they've stalked online. But generally speaking, like that was at the heart of it, is that we knew that, like, even if there are going to be certainly huge periods of this that feel extremely labor intensive and feel like a job. You know, the fact that we're sort of really doing it together is the thing that we want to do. And that's also just a huge piece of like, whether it's successes or failures. And, you know, Lord knows we've fucked up enough in the process of doing this and had things that were huge waste of money or anything like that. But the camaraderie of like being able to, you know, look back and crack a beer and bullshit about all those things together with that shared history is just it's been really sort of like the foundational thing that makes the whole thing something that we can, you know, renew over and over again.
Right.
That's fucking beautiful,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah. And I have to say, I mean, I totally get what you're saying with there. I'm sure there's so many hardships with doing this and so many things you wish you could do differently in retrospect. But the fact that you guys have pulled this off, number one, even in normal times, it would be amazing. But that you've done it during the pandemic is just unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, dude, getting like the actual act of picking up our liquor license from City Hall was it was like a terrible amateur Ocean's 11 knockoff.
<Da-na-na>. I wish I had the music on. I could have played it.
Yeah. Well, you could get it later and like dub it in.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
That's like that's I'd Mission that. Impossible, actually.
Ah, fuck.
I think if you mash them up, you avoid all copyright issues if you do 49% of each song.
Yeah, exactly. And if you speed one up a little bit and slow another one down, it totally, yeah,
nice.
Works out. One thing I wanted to talk about, actually, too, Mike, you brought up just kind of urban planning and the urban landscape. Right. But you also have you're doing a podcast and I guess it's a blog, a website, the Well Street Journal.
Yeah, it's a Substack, I suppose. But yeah, it's been interesting. So I had mentioned that my background was sort of in state and local politics. And one of my experiences there was that you're really constrained in what you can say publicly in any way whatsoever.
Why'd you come on this podcast?
Well, I mean, because like back when I was working in the government, it literally got to the point where I had an Illinois political blog dig up my old high school football records and get my sister fired from her job. I mean, it is as ruthless as you can imagine with any scrap of information out there.
Holy crap!
Yeah, it's wild. And you know, I'm a person who likes to sort of riff a little bit, and I discover a lot of my opinions through sitting down to write them out. Yeah. And so the thing that married to was, you know, we had been doing pretty well from a like business traffic perspective up until, you know, mid-November, at which point there was this huge national like wave of cases and we could no longer do any business indoors or anything like that. And from kind of that point till almost just recently, you know, it was a piece of having to acknowledge that no matter how much you want to like jumpstart business demand, you have to accept that you are adrift in a lifeboat and you just have to drift sometimes. It's like, if you feel like you're going to, you know, grab the paddle and paddle all the way across the Pacific, all you're doing is, you know, tiring yourself out and probably going in the wrong direction.
Right.
So I kind of realized I was at a point where I could, you know, voice my opinions in a way I had not been able to voice previously, but also, could use a productive outlet for all the nervous energy I was feeling. And so I started the world's least ambitious Substack, which covers like a 2-block stretch of Rockwell Street in Chicago between Elston Avenue and Belmont Avenue. And it's been interesting that, I think the more narrowly you focus on a niche, the more you can find a nexus with like any topic under the sun. And so I started the Substack. I mean, this is, you know, this is a very, very low triple digit subscriber enterprise. And it's been interesting to see what happens once you have even the patina of something official like that. You know, that I started publishing just some goofball stuff about two guys that are members of Guild Row who find deadfalls in the forest preserve and turn it into firewood and bring it here. And, you know, then I've been fielding texts with people like asking if they can get hired by those guys. And it's like, those guys don't, it's not their job, right? What they do. But people are like, oh, no, I saw it. Like, this seems like a job. And there's a guy who works for a furniture fabrication studio down the street who was like, can I like apply to write for this thing?
Nice.
Like, yeah, I mean, the job application is like, do you have an internet connection?
Right.
You know, yes or no. But I mean, Chris is kind to bring it up. I've got a big Sunday expose coming out that started off with me being pissed off about an outdated piece of infrastructure that is, 300 yards from the front door of Guild Row, and ended up as a, broadside against the Aaron Sorkin version of the movie Moneyball. it goes all over the place, but as from what I have perceived to this point, I don't think ArtShed is a stranger to that type of kind of open trajectory conversation.
No,
that's how we roll.
Yeah.
And like so much shit when you're Mike, you say so many things, and there's like I try to shut up. There's a million things that go through my head that I want to say, because obviously I'm a complete spaz.
Right. Carlos, you learned to suppress that,
though. I've suppressed it. I have to say funny, stupid shit, though, when I can.
Teach me your secrets.
I would say he's channeled it more than suppressed.
Right. You're right.
Yeah. Right. Oh, you know what? This is totally random. Okay. Sorry, guys. I'm going off the subject here. For some reason, when you were talking about, I was thinking of the other night. I was like up late drinking, and I'll watch a movie, right? So I watched St. Elmo's Fire, right? I started watching it.
The movie I was thinking you were going to say.
Yeah.
Right?
Very surprising.
I know. Totally random, right? So, but the thing is, it was in the 80s, and it was about they were in bars and they had a bunch of friends and shit like that. And I'm like, I had to shut it off because I can't watch this movie because it's like, at this point, it's so foreign to me. Yeah. Like people like being a group of people and having fun and the 80s and being young. Like, I don't know about any of that shit anymore. I'm like, I got to shut this down. And the other thing I shut up about when you said Chicago politics, I was like, did you know Blagojevich?
Right. Yes. I want to talk about St. Elmo's Fire first.
Okay.
I can go on about Blagojevich at unbelievable length. I don't even know if I should tell the story.
Go ahead.
Well, first let's talk St. Elmo's Fire.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's interesting that, I know what you're talking about. I've had a similar phenomenon, even like watching things where like, it's not even like good stuff is happening. Like, I think I saw like RoboCop or something, like something dystopian.
Yeah. Right.
I'm like, man, no one's wearing masks. Those
mm-hmm.
Except RoboCop.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. Well, but
he's
RoboCop
not wearing a mask, though.
He has his nose and mouth. He has an anti-mask.
Yeah. 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 Right.
Yeah.
He has an eye mask. Yeah.
Yeah. So Blagojevich, I have a couple of Blagojevich stories.
Okay.
One is that the Iraq War got me evicted from an apartment in 2008.
What?
I haven't thought about this in a long time. So the way that I got involved in the whole kind of Illinois and Chicago politics scene is that the guy who was my high school history teacher and was the basketball coach in my high school was a guy named John Quinn. And his brother, Pat Quinn, was a long time sort of good government gadfly in Illinois politics, that he would, you know, walk across the state to gather signatures to, you know, set up controls on what utilities could charge people, or he passed a constitutional amendment to reduce the number of legislators that we had, or things like that. And, you know, he was always kind of running for this or running for that. And he was state treasurer at one point, and then he lost and tried to run for other stuff. But in 2002, he ran for lieutenant governor. And at the time in Illinois, governor and lieutenant governor were like independently elected offices. It wasn't like president and vice president. And he wins the lieutenant governorship and has a very combative relationship with Blagojevich, who is a study in politics all unto himself. But he is a lieutenant governor of Illinois, which if you've seen the show Veep, it's somewhat like that, except with even less prestige and funding. You know, it's like he can afford a staff of five as long as no one wants to make more than $21,000 a year. Hmm. And so the way that he would populate that staff is he would ask his brother, the basketball coach, like, who do you know who's a young guy getting out of college who hustles from basketball? And I played football in high school, not basketball, but, you know, this lieutenant governor's office was staffed with like all my idiot friends from growing up. So, I mean, you know, it was a lot of stuff like marching hungover and small town Memorial Day parades and stuff like that. But then when all this Blagojevich impeachment stuff goes down, which to the Iraq war piece, like, so, you know, the Obama's inside track on Clinton in the 08 primary was that he was against the Iraq war and she was for the Iraq war. So he wins the nomination, he wins the presidency, his Senate seat gets vacated. Blagojevich tries to sell his Senate seat, and that's what ultimately brings him down. And at the time, I was living with a good buddy of mine who was the chief of staff to Pat Quinn, who was lieutenant governor. And we were in the third floor of a walk-up building in Chicago, and we lived above like three women who were dancers at a strip club by the airport. And, you know, you would think like, oh, this is a sitcom, like dream come true type thing. But really what it was like a match made in hell thing where, you know, they were going to sleep at 7 a.m. just as we were getting up and getting ready for work. And so they hated us and right. We felt put out. And obviously any landlord is like, if I can rent to, you know, three women or three idiot 23-year-old male, like, ogres, I'm going to come down the side of women. So we were on this like zero tolerance policy from our landlord. And my buddy gets a call like 5 a.m. from a tip off being like, the FBI is about to arrest Blagojevich today. Like, get ready. Your boss is about to become the governor of Illinois. And he starts like jumping around screaming and we're cracking beers and like celebrating and all this stuff. And then we wake up the girls downstairs and we're like, my buddy's literally on the phone trying to arrange like logistics for the swearing in of the new governor. And in the background, it's like the girls from downstairs screaming at us. And then the like landlord saying like, get your stuff and get the fuck out of here. so that's on the front end. And on the back end, as we were kind of developing these buildings for Guild Row, we were in a situation where in Chicago, having the support of your local city council member, which in the lexicon of Chicago is called the alderman, having support of your local alderman means everything. And the alderman of the neighborhood in which Guild Row sits, when we started the project, was a woman named Deb, who... great, great person and super interesting and smart and dedicated public servant, also just happened to be the sister-in-law of Rod Blagojevich. So it was a situation where like her dad had been the alderman for a long time and there had been talk that he was going to hand down the political dynasty to Rod, but then Rod went to prison, and Deb, you know, wherever she was going in life, kind of for both her family and the other families in the ward that depended on her family, was meant to like take up the mantle. And like I said, super intelligent, dedicated, high ethics person who had helped us a lot, but she was in, as we were midway through building the project, found herself in a very tight race for alderman. And, you know, we're not developers. Like, we don't know exactly what we're doing. And so we didn't want to piss anyone off, but we also didn't want to like not, you know, participate in the political process. So we decided like, we're not going to contribute money anywhere whatsoever. And we basically divided forces, right? Between my partners and I, it was like, you and you go volunteer for the Challenger and, you know, do the best job that you can, and I'll volunteer for Deb, and I'll do the best job that I can. And, you know, we'll let kind of the voters sort it all out. And so, I mean, I would go there on like a Tuesday afternoon. I would go to the campaign office and, you know, cut walk lists or do whatever was needed to be done, assemble yard signs, whatever. And one day I'm there in the middle of the day, and the only other person in the office with me is like Deb's sister, Patty Blagojevich. And so it's this like surreal thing. And this is like during the time when she's going on Fox News all the time, asking Trump to pardon Blagojevich and all that stuff.
Wow.
It's this weird moment where like she's being totally like gracious and nice because I'm a volunteer and things like that. But it's one of those weird things where it's like, we both know who you are, and neither of us really know who I am in this environment right now. Right. And so we're just like sitting there talking, you know, putting together yard signs or whatever. And my phone rings, and it's my buddy calling. And this was the day that story broke about all those celebrities who had tried to like clout their kids into USC or wherever.
Right.
And so I pick up the phone, and my buddy screams at like 40 decibels, "Oh my God, can you believe it? The FBI just raided Aunt Becky's house. It's the greatest day in the history of the FBI since they raided Blagojevich." And like, I felt 2 inches tall. And it was like, I was like, I should maybe go. And she's like, yeah, okay, maybe you should go. And I was like, holy shit, what bad timing. So those are my Rod Blagojevich stories that I can share here. And, you know, Deb ultimately lost re-election and had a totally gracious transition of power to the new alderman, Rosana Rodriguez Sanchez, who is also hugely supportive and great. So, you know, if anyone is listening and wants to kill me, I hope that's not the case. You know, people trying to do their best, but yeah.
What is this, the gracious transition of power? What is that?
We don't know anything about that.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. So,
I'm sorry. I just told like a 15-minute story.
No.
Dude, are you kidding me? I think this episode is a damn good episode. And yeah. I shouldn't say that during the episode, but whatever. I'll cut this out too.
That's what you put at the beginning, Carl.
Yeah. No way. I already have the beginning. I got that at the start.
At the beginning? Yeah. Nice. Okay.
I got the cold intro, whatever the fuck it's called. I definitely heard it. You guys nailed it before we even started. So
nice.
That was gold.
All right.
All right. So we've totally lost our fucking flow here.
Should we wrap this episode up?
Yeah, it's 55. It's probably going to be about 50 minutes. Yeah. Yeah, let's wrap it up. Okay, so tell me, tell us about online, where we can find you, Mike.
The place where it would be important to find me online if you're in Chicago is Guild Row, GUILDROW.CO. That is the business website, and all information would flow from there. As far as the Substack and the bizarre project that is itself, it's the Well Street Journal, So I, you know, it's the Rock Wall Street Journal, but truncated to Wall Street. So it's thewellstreetjournal.substack.com. It is, it's a totally free, you know, publication and offering. So, you know, all, any and all are welcome. And outside of that, you know, I used to coach high school football, so I have a couple of football message boards that I'm active on, but I think I'll probably keep those in my back pocket right now.
All right, Chris, where are you, man?
I'm, as always, livefirecook.com. New recipes coming out almost at a daily rate. I even have people testing recipes before I release them now. Yeah, getting serious. So, livefirecook.
Andy?
AndyRestino.com. You can find links to my Twitter and Tumblr, Instagram, my YouTube channel where I do drawing videos. And then I also have a book coming out in March.
Oh.
And oh, it's all right.
I didn't mean that. I
yeah, to... yeah. You're preparing. Yeah, so I have a book coming out.
Congratulations on your Academy Award.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. that was a while ago, but thank you. I appreciate that.
Andy's Academy Award.
Yeah.
And Carl with his new sound effect buttons.
Yeah, yeah, brand new. We've never heard that one before.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, yeah, I have a comic on the digestive system. It's a science comic. It's an educational comic coming out through First Second Publishing. You can find it at bookstores everywhere and online. You can pre-order it. But it might be out by the time this podcast airs, so...
Sweet.
Carlo, how about yourself?
MadCarl.com and MadSpiral.com. They both go to the same website that I've maintained forever, and it's just completely aimless, where I make no money. I just put art up there. And I got, you'll find me on social media at on Facebook, Carl Restaino, R-I-S-T-A-I-N-O. And the same name on Instagram. And you know what they say? You can do art in the art shed, but you got to get the hell out of here. Get the hell out of the guild. Drink in the guild. Get the fuck out of here. You can't stay here. God, I really screwed that end up.
Yeah. Thanks to Mike Healy for being a guest. Thanks to Carl and Chris for helping host the show. Thanks to Ed Guild and Andy Sinisvago for the Mad Carl Stomp. Thanks to all our listeners. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week.
Mike, that was a sick episode.
Yeah,
thanks,
Mike.
Guys. That was a lot.
That was a lot of fun.
I'm turning up the music.